The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Good morning to you. It's Wednesday, the 18th of February, 4 minutes past nine. You're very welcome along to today's Greg Hughes Show. We've lots coming up on the programme today, including a chat a little later on with Lisa McGee, who is a very proud Derry woman, strong Donegal connections as well. She's responsible for the Derry Girls, of course, but she also has a new blockbuster show. It seems to be very well received, which is now streaming on Netflix. And we had a chat with her yesterday evening. We'll play that out for you a little later on. That and so much more besides. We will, though, encourage you to watch the programme if that suits you. Listen, radio's where it's at, but we love it if you watch too, if that helps. You can watch us anywhere, really, on YouTube, on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, on the YouTube app. Just search Highland Radio Ireland. A like and subscribe's really quite useful, if you don't mind. And also we're on Facebook, across our Facebook pages here at Highland Radio, and on the X platform. So no excuse not to get involved. And just to remind you, and maybe it's helpful to people in your life, that if you watch on YouTube or Facebook, it does come along with subtitles as well. They are auto-generated, pretty accurate. And it just means that maybe someone's hard of hearing now, or always has been, and it's a good way to stay up to date with what's happening in the region, because you can sort of effectively read what's going on as we go along as well. So that's just an option to make the show as inclusive as is possible. Right, it seems so good news. You might remember last week, the first indications we got of potential cutbacks in SNAs for no particular reason was in St. Oran's School in Inishowen, in the National School. They put together a very strong argument as to why they needed to retain the SNAs that they had, and they were able to demonstrate and prove it. But there had been new guidelines that had been put out, which meant that lots of schools like that one were seeing a reduction in SNAs. And it all comes down to the role of SNAs and what an SNA does and how they're allocated to different schools. 25,000 SNAs in the country, so you think that's enough to go around. You can always need more. I know they're working very hard and are overstretched. But anyway, those cuts now are being suspended whilst there is a review, and it's widely reported. But I'll tell you what I will be doing later is speaking to Anne, who is an SNA, and she'll give us a really good insight into, what may or may not have been going on there. But the Irish Times tells us that a review of special needs assistance allocation is being paused after criticism from teachers, parents and unions. The U-turn came after the National Council for Special Education contacted almost 200 schools indicating their allocations were being reduced. Minister for Education and Youth Hildegard Nocton had indicated that the reviews would continue, but said yesterday she would pause the process. A total of 584 reviews have been carried out, with two-thirds of schools set to retain or grow their SNA allocation from 2026. However, 194 schools would see their allocation cut. I want to reiterate that there are no cuts to SNA numbers. I want to ensure that SNAs are with the children who most need their care, Nocton said. No further letters on SNA review outcomes will issue until these engagements have concluded in the coming weeks, the minister said. The Department of Education had said the number of SNAs allocated to a school can change for various reasons, including fluctuating student numbers, changes in care needs, or students moving to post-primary level. And we know that, but some of the reasons for SNAs being removed really went beyond that criteria. But as I say, we'll tease that out a little more later on in the programme. The plans, again, are back in swing for under-16s to be banned from social media, apparently. But this is... like, this reminds me a little bit of the new defective concrete block scheme. And if you bear with me, I'll explain why. Because there's problems with that scheme. There's no doubt about that. I think most people would concede that. And even those in government say, look, it's a movable feast and it'll have to be improved here or there or react. But really, all of that scrutiny should have happened beforehand. It should have happened before the defective block legislation came in, arguably, right? So you should have had legislative scrutiny. Go through it, examine it, open conversations, speak to all of those involved to make sure that this multi-billion euro plan was fit for purpose. And many argue that it is, by the way. Some argue that it's not. But this ban on under-16s has been done with no consultation, right? There's no talking to parents, really. There seems to be no talking to schools. There's no talking to those whom it might affect. There's no talking to us about having to give our ID to access the internet, because that's what would happen, right? So this is like the executive of the state making a decision, a unilateral decision, that we don't know whether it will work or not. In fact, there were studies that came out very recently that suggested there's no improvement in a child's mental health, for an example, in schools where there's a complete ban on mobile phones. I'm not saying let's not do a ban. I'm saying, would it not make more sense to have a conversation about it? Because there are already EU rules and regulations that aren't properly implemented here. But what we are looking at is for any of you out there to engage with, at the moment, social media, but probably then maybe more mature websites or VPNs. You know, you might use a VPN for whatever reason you choose to use it. We're heading to a situation where everybody will have to supply their ID to use the internet in many, many different ways, and certainly social media. This is to protect under-16s. And the default position, obviously, is, of course, we want to protect our children, don't we? But then others will say, well, what is the actual motivation for introducing these rules in the first place? Evidence would suggest from Australia that under-16s are circumnavigating this very, very easily. Yet here we are introducing technology that's arguably been proven not to work elsewhere. And it means all of you, if you want to use the internet, will have to use your public services card potentially, which is open to challenge, etc. So that's why I feel perhaps you could argue we're putting the cart before the horse. Let's have the conversation rather than, you know, 14 people around a table in Dublin deciding, yes, this is what we're doing. Let's move forward. Let's move ahead. Because it's no coincidence. It probably is a coincidence, but there's lots of stories around at the moment at politicians getting abuse on social media and trying to track down who's responsible for that. Well, those things would be a thing of the past. That's just one example. Everyone would have to have ID before they could post anything. But anyway, the government will today confirm plans to restrict social media use by under-16s in Ireland. Ministers will consider the new digital and AI strategy, a draft of which states that introducing age restrictions will be a priority for the European presidency later this year. While the preference within government is for the issue to be addressed at a European level, Ireland is expected to take action on the issue regardless, coalition sources have indicated. Taoiseach Simon Harris said recently that social media companies were experimenting with the mental health of Ireland's youth, adding that he supported a ban on the platforms for under-16s. And just one more point in relation to this. We host these technology companies, not exclusively, but the majority of them. And surely we should be exercising national pressure for them to protect the children, for them to look at the algorithms, for them to employ technology to block certain words and phrases and what have you, or flag accounts that are abusing others. All that technology is there, but instead of us, I think it suits the social media companies for this route rather than for them to have to take responsibility and implement stuff themselves. But anyway, apparently Irish people have the second highest rate of criticism about the lack of investment in defence of their own country in the EU, according to a new report. I actually don't buy this, but I'm reading it anyway to see what you guys think. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. I really don't think people are that worried about this. The Eurobarometer poll revealed 48% of us in Ireland believe the level of spending on defence and security here is not enough compared to the EU average of 34%. Only people living in Portugal, 50%, had a higher rate of criticism about spending on key defence and security programmes on a national basis. The survey showed 38% of Irish citizens also claim the level of investment by the EU on similar measures is insufficient, again, the second highest in the EU after France. These are the types of polls that might be used to form international policy. Honestly, if you've got 10 friends, do you think five of them are concerned about we're not spending enough on defence in this country? Or maybe I'm out of touch. Caroline, are you worried about how much we're spending on defence? Do you ever consider it? Do you think we should spend more? No, just nonplussed. No, we're a neutral country, you see, so we don't really consider that too much, do we? But anyway, this is an interesting story. A Thai masseur who has stopped accepting male customers after she was bombarded with requests for sexual services, has gone to the Gardaí. Jacinta Fitzpatrick set up her business in Letterbrack, a small village in Galway, in October. But the qualified therapist has been inundated with calls and messages inquiring about certain services. The masseur said creepy men have also sent her pictures of a personal nature, in addition to talking about the services she provides. Jacinta said she continues to receive sexual requests daily. So what's going on here? It would be interesting to find out if any of you work in this area. You can contact us anonymously. But it seems to be, from some of the social media reaction I've seen to this, that if you work in this area, and particularly it would seem if you are of a Thai background, that you will get these requests on a daily basis. Who's asking for it? You know, what is going on with, what's going on, lads? I'm not saying it's all of us, but there must be a hell of a lot of people with that expectation. And apparently most of them are in relationships as well, too. So I don't know if you've got any understanding or experience of what's going on there. Maybe you work in the industry. Maybe it's not just ladies with a Thai background that are being asked these questions for additional services. If you have any view in relation to that, as I say, you can contact us in confidence on 086 60 25,000 or call us on 07491 25,000. The Finn Valley Voice is out today as well. The Northwest region, including Connacht, along with the three Ulster counties, is currently a transition region qualifying for EU co-financing rates of 60% on major projects. But the new classification will see co-financing drop to 50% or less, posing a major threat to the TEN-T and other projects. It does not reflect the changes on the ground, says NWRAA economist Mr. John Daly. And I did note too, there was a story that came out a couple of days ago talking about challenges based on our legal challenges based on the overall output, emissions output to major infrastructural projects relating to roads. And I did wonder, could that cast a dark cloud over the TEN-T project as well? But anyway, staying kind of in the area of transport, you might have heard that the Letterkenny Town bus service was no longer operating. We spoke to a gentleman who was one of the users of it, and then we were joined by others, and it's no longer running. Can I read this letter from... Can I read this letter, and I can state for the company to which it's from? Okay. So it was a letter sent by Doherty Travel, and this is what they said in regards to Letterkenny Town. We've been doing the Letterkenny Town bus service for 19 years now, and it's with regret that we have to cease the route as from now. In the past 2 years, we've been working to upgrade the service to run from 6:30 a.m. to 11:30 at night on a 7 day a week, with three separate routes. This was at the request of the Letterkenny Municipal Council and the NTA. The NTA had then approved the three new routes. We then had to wait and see if there were going to be any support from the department. Over the past year, we've been told by the NTA that there is a chance of coming under the Local Link umbrella. Then last week, after a meeting with the NTA in Dublin, they confirmed that there was no funding available for the Letterkenny Town service, so we had to make the decision to stop the service as there's no way of running the routes without some support from the department. This is a vital lifeline for many people in and around Letterkenny. So that's what Doherty Travel had sent. But anyway, we made our own inquiries then to the National Transport Authority. And they said, I hope you're well, thank you. The NTA has received confirmation that the town bus service in Letterkenny, formerly operated by Doherty Coaches on a commercial basis, has now ceased. Following a public consultation in August 2024, a plan was finalised by the NTA for new public service obligation subsidised town bus services in Letterkenny. The provision of the new services is subject to funding and operational readiness, and we cannot provide a firm timeline for their introduction at present. It could be at least the end of this year. They were due, I think, if I'm not mistaken, to come in towards the end of last year. That was deferred, and there seems to be some uncertainty as to when it might actually happen. So they're not going to do anything about it. And between now and then, Letterkenny, a big, big town, borderline city, has no scheduled transport in and around it. An absolute disgrace in any modern society. I think we can all agree on that. Population 22,000, no bus service. Good news, Donegal's been allocated €69 million funding for projects and maintenance of the roads network. Brian Cannon is Director of Roads and Transportation with Donegal County Council. He's with me now. Brian, this is an annual allocation, isn't it? It's just really as to how much it is what we wait on. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, Greg, we get the annual allocations each and every year around about this time from both TAI and the Department of Transport in relation to improvements to our national road network and our regional and local road network. And I suppose we're very pleased to have received the allocations yesterday, as you said, just over €69 million. And that breaks down to just over €23 million for our national road network. And that actually represents the sixth highest allocation for any local authority in the country, and is up just over €4 million on our allocation for last year. And we also then received notification of just over €46 million for our regional and local road network, which is actually the third highest allocation for a county in the country, and that's up €3.8 million on 2025.
How significant is it that a portion of this is dedicated to the 10T project in terms of, you know, intent and keeping that project ticking along?
It's vital. The 10T project, the three sections, the Belfast Murray Bypass, the link into Letterkenny and across the Swilly, including improvements to the dual carriageway, and then the Lufford to Manor stretch are vitally important to Donegal and connectivity. And we've had great support from Transport Infrastructure Ireland on that project, great support from our elected council and from our office members. And we're moving towards a big milestone on that project where we submit that to a commission finale and we publish the CPO for that project. So that money is vital to keep that project moving, and we're moving in the right direction.
So, because this money is expected, is some of this work ongoing in terms of spend on regional roads and new projects and maintenance of national roads? So is this sort of like a rolling situation, or do you have to wait to get the total €69 million in this case and then start to decide priorities?
So when it comes to our regional local road network for our everyday surfacing and improvement projects, we expect a level of funding each year in our, we call it restoration improvements. That's our overlay projects on our regional and local road network. We have to establish a 3-year programme. So this is the second year of the third year of the programme. And if you get more money, it means that you can do more than you had planned. So our restoration improvement money is up €1.3 million this year than on last year. So we would have programs already agreed with our elected members. We'll sit down and review that in light of the new allocation that we've received, and we'll continue with the improvement. Like last year, on the overlay on our regional local road network, we did 230 separate projects across 164 kilometres of regional local road. And they're very important to people. They're the roads that people live on, the people that use to go to the local facilities. And in addition to that, surface dressing, which is tar and chips, surface dressing over the tops, basically to hold the road, to reseal it. We did 212 projects last year, over 216 kilometres. So that money is vital to keep our local and regional road network in reasonable shape.
Yeah, now we've seen, I think the most recently started project, be it sort of in a demonstrative purpose with the sod turning up, would be the roundabout down in Lahey, which I think has been a long, long time coming. And I think it's going to be a real game changer in terms of safety. Are projects like that funded from this pot, or is that TII, or what way does that work?
Yeah, so that they're funded from the €23 million that we've been allocated from TII, so the Lahey roundabout project is on the N15, the National Primary Road. So we've received an allocation of 3.5 million towards that in our as part of this 23 million. So, but they're all very important. As I say, TAA and DOP are very supportive of the work of local authorities. They're very mature funders. We work with them on an ongoing basis year on year, quite familiar with the challenges that we have and with the areas where we need to improve. And obviously, we would always take more money if we got it, but it's great to see this year that we've got a significant improvement across a number of headings.
Now, finally, because the audio's not just superb, but we're getting the message, Brian. Often then we get an 18, 20, 22, 23 million allocation announcement, you know, really quite close to the end of the year. What goes on there? What's happening there?
When you're referring to that level of funding, Greg, that's not generally a level of just
right, okay. I might be misthinking. I just think sometimes in my head in autumn there's normally like another lump of funding that seems to come towards roads. No,
sometimes, Greg, we do get what they would call a supplementary allocation.
Right, okay.
And that I suppose the way that the government has to budget is that it sets aside money across different headings, and then maybe perhaps as other areas don't spend money to the Lima project.
But you can't bank on that. That can come, but you can't bank on it.
It can come. Now, it wouldn't be of the 18 million. You know, sometimes we expect maybe an extra million or something towards restoration improvement monies. But
maybe you need me. Maybe you need me in the Department of Transport. Okay. Listen, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. That's Brian Cannon, Director of Roads and Transportation with Donegal County Council. Apologies, the audio not amazing there, but hopefully you got the message nice and clear. Staying with the roads, by the way, if you're out and about on them, there's an oil spill, I'm told, from Fannad Bridge Junction, the entrance through Carrigart, heading towards Creasla. So that's from the turnoff to the Harry the Harry Blaney Bridge. Right through Carrigart, out past Mickey Joe's, and then out the Creasler Road. What is going on there? Not there specifically, but with these oil spills. Where do you think is it vehicles that are overfilled and it's swashing out of the tank, or is it spillage from stuff that's in a trailer? What is going on that we get so many of these oil spills? And do you think there's anything we can do to? Is there anything we can do to try and reduce the amount of them? I'm not talking about a specific area here. I'm talking more generally across the county, because it does seem to be an everyday two or three times a day issue. Today is Wednesday, the 18th of February, and it is National No Smoking Day. We're joined by Mo Kelly from Rathmullen. This week he's celebrating 100 days smoke-free. Congratulations.
Thanks very much, Greg.
How are you feeling? You're not going to rip my head off or anything, are you?
No. I feel good.
good.
It's kind of unbelievable, to be honest.
How quickly did you... Sorry, also with us is Fiona Boyle, Tobacco Lead and Senior Health Promotions Officer with the HSE. Lovely
Morning,
to have
Greg.
You in, as always. But just... How soon did you start feeling better from not smoking? In terms of, I don't know, did you find that you're... You seem a generally fit person, right? But did you find any health improvements, breathing, stuff like that?
I think it's the way, myself and Fiona, it's been a journey. Yeah. Thanks to Fiona and the Donegal's non-smoking services to quit smoking. We need to probably go back to that, but how I feel today, I definitely feel a lot better. I feel a lot fitter and much more energy. But it's kind of, I'm still in shock that I'm really off the cigarettes, to be honest. And it's really... I'm here to promote what Fiona does.
Yeah.
It's a way to say thank you as well. And just to also say that there have been many Ash Wednesdays that I have seen come and go, and just to do a few hours to try and give up cigarettes, whatever, non-smoking day, National Non-Smoking Day. And also those days have gone, you know. I realised that I needed help, and that's what I get that message across to people is to... You see the quit.ie ads on TV, Ash Wednesdays come and go. So just to really, just to seek help. And
I think
Fiona,
it's really important, because I'm not sure how many people who want to consider getting help, in inverted commas, if that makes sense. And I am going to speak extensively to Fiona, of course, but just how long were you smoking for, Mo?
I suppose on and off 30 years.
Yeah. How long have you been wanting to stop smoking? You know, actively going, bloody hell, the clothes stink, it's cost a fortune, it's affecting my health. Like, how long have you actively been thinking, I want to stop smoking?
I think there's many listeners out there will be in the same boat. We all want to stop smoking, really. But it's a case of, when do I start and how do I do it? So I think really I got in contact with Fiona. I know Fiona from the locality, and the job that she does is amazing. So really it was just a step. And the 31st of October was when we first met, Halloween, and that's really since meeting Fiona, and we'll go into that after.
Yeah, for sure. Fiona, today's an important day, right? It is National No Smoking Day. Is it advisable that someone listens to this and go, right, I'm just going to pack them in today then because it's this day? You know, for some a minority that might work, but would you say that today's more the day to set a plan?
Yeah, absolutely. The evidence would be quite clear, Greg, in that people who try to do it by themselves cold turkey, roughly about 2% of the population will manage to be able to do it that way. Whereas if you actually seek help and use the appropriate treatment for your addiction, you're talking about anything up to 20%. Mm. So that's, you know, 10 times the likelihood that it'll be successful.
One in five. Yeah. You know, you keep that going and eventually you end up with a smoke-free population. Yeah. That's the significance of that. So what, if someone reaches out to the likes of yourself or your colleagues, what happens? What chain of events does that kick in?
Okay, so the referrals come from various different sources. So people can self-refer, or they can be referred by a healthcare professional, or they can be referred through the quit.ie website as well. So once we become aware of them, the local stop smoking advisor, and we've got 4 staff working in Donegal at the moment and 13 locations, so there's chances are there's going to be one near you. They'll get in touch with the individual and they'll have a conversation with them over the phone. Just again, like that, to see, are you motivated to stop smoking? Is it something that you're planning to do in the next month or so? And if so, then we will set an appointment. All being well, it'll be face-to-face. That's the ideal. It doesn't always suit everybody, so we can do some phone support or attend anywhere like Zoom. And then you would arrange to see them in an appointment. The initial appointment is for about 60 minutes, so it's quite intensive. And during that appointment, we would look at things like their previous history with tobacco use. What have they tried in the past? What has worked? What hasn't? What got them back smoking again? What are their triggers? We would look at all of that. We would do a decisional balance with them, with the client. So that's kind of weighing up the pros and cons. We would look at their motivation. How important is it? How ready are they? How confident are they? And then we would develop a plan. And we would, it's the client that would set the quit date. We don't tell them when to stop smoking. We will work with them and guide them as to, you know what, we think you're ready now. Or the client will say to us, you know, I'm thinking about, in most cases, the beginning of November. And then once we've decided that, we look at the different treatments that are available. And they would consist of either nicotine replacement therapies, and there's a number of products in that line. And thankfully, there's a new medication called varenicline that has come back on the market again as well. That would be the most successful. And we would guide them as to what might work for them and how to take it and what to look out for in case there's any issues with it.
And I presume you don't want to be replacing an addiction with a dependency either.
No.
So whatever the treatment is, there's a plan there, isn't there?
So generally speaking, for the majority of clients and for the majority of treatments, it's for a 12-week period. And some of the treatments have got a reducing dose. So, for example, if you choose to use the patches, you'll be on the high-strength patch for roughly the first 8 weeks, then a medium strength for 2 weeks, and then a lower strength for 2 weeks.
A lot of people would be just anxious about the whole idea of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the anticipation of potentially stopping smoking rather than having actually tried it. Do you pick that up in
Absolutely.
The consultation?
Absolutely, yeah. It's the majority, I can honestly say the majority of clients who we've supported over the years have often said, you know, the thinking about stopping was actually more difficult than the actual stopping itself. Because you are guided well. It's that whole thing about, you know, fail to prepare to fail.
So what are some of the biggest motivators? You know, obviously health, cost, maybe social stigma.
Yeah, environment, children, pregnancy. Yeah.
It's all of them. There's no one that's above head and shoulders above the rest. No. Everyone's situation is different.
What I would say to Greg is that if finances is your only motivation, then it could be a difficult journey, because in that, I often find in that situation, you're having to stop rather than wanting to stop.
But I presume through the hour-long consultation, it becomes clear that, right, I'm hanging me jacket on the cost, but there's much more about this that I...
And people will often come in and say the reason I'm stopping is finances, but then whenever actually we have the deeper conversations with them, you'll often find it's actually not just about the cost.
And you talked about tried and tested. This is tried and tested.
Absolutely.
You've got success stories in every parish in the region.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
You know, well, I know so. You're being very modest. You had this conversation at Halloween. Very scary. Very scary.
No, really. I thought an amazing statistic that Fiona shared after the hour consultation, like, why do you smoke, when do you smoke? And, you know, it was really in-depth and it was very valuable, really. But I thought the most amazing statistic was that Fiona said to me, if I stopped smoking for 24 hours, I would have the same carbon monoxide levels in my blood as a non-smoker, which I thought after all the years I smoked was a pretty huge statistic. And I thought that was one of the main motivating factors. So I thought, well, I'll definitely try one day. And it was on the 1st of November I tried it because, you know, when I left the meeting, to be honest, and on Halloween, I thought that was a great meeting. And the first thing I did was I lit up a cigarette.
Yeah.
But then I thought I'm going to really try from the 1st of November. Mm-hmm. And just to try and do that carbon monoxide level, I thought that was a huge... Okay. That for me was the real deal breaker, as well as the consultation that you gave me.
So in other words, if you start... I don't know, let's use the gym. Gyms are fantastic, but you might be waiting a month or 2 months or 3 months with the smoking cessation journey. There's milestones that you reach very quickly, mm-hmm. which is helpful, isn't it? It's encouraging. How did the treatments, if I could call it that, help with urges? Because what was your trigger, the morning coffee?
Excellent question, Greg. You know, I think, again, a lot of listeners out there will know this. I think for me, the morning was definitely with a cup of tea, definitely. Also being out social, you know, drinking or whatever, the weekends, a few pints with the boys or whatever. Absolutely, you would go, a cigarette does go hand in hand.
Yeah.
It's not the most glamorous conversation, but
it's
true.
It's the truth.
It really is the truth.
Many people have been there.
So Fiona has tried to help me from Halloween. How do we break this? So really it was, the 24-hour thing was a big thing. What I used was the patches that Fiona gave me were excellent, and they were all free, which was a bonus. I would have paid for them now, to be honest. Most smokers would to try and stop. But the fact that it's this service that Fiona provides is all free. The nicotine replacement therapy is all free. It was amazing. For me, what it was the patches. But then the next thing, it was 2 days. And then, oh my God, it was a week. I kind of thought, right. But the other thing too, very important to say this to the listeners is, Fiona, you would text me every 4 or 5 days and a phone call every week. And then we would meet every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And you also said that I could text any time, which I did one time, you know, I'd say every 3 or 4 weeks. And I was kind of struggling. It was on Saturday. And I remember I texted you just to say, but just to say as well too, to anybody listening, is the want and the desire to have the cigarette, it does actually pass.
But also even in the early stages, there's waves, isn't there, whereby you have that massive urge and then it passes and then it comes, and it's riding those waves with the assistance of the treatment until such time as you're in calm seas.
Absolutely. I think that's very well said. And the other thing too is, for many years, I had the habit of smoking. Through this service that Fiona provides, I now have the habit of not smoking. And you kind of get the habit of, say, for instance, in the morning, not having, you know, cigarette or whatever, or even going out socially. And I would also like to say that you guided me socially on that. You know, I didn't go out the first weekend or the first 2 weekends, but after that, I was encouraged to go out and do what I normally did and see how I felt, which I thought was a very big thing.
Yeah.
So you normalised it.
Yeah, and also, too, that gets a point whereby one of your motivations, presumably personally, is not to go back there again because you've done so well. You know, you don't want to let yourself down.
Well, the main reason I'm on here is to promote what Fiona does and what the HSE and the quit.ie, especially Donegal branches. I don't think I can really go back smoking after this interview now.
So you don't want to Fiona down. A caller says, forever grateful to Fiona. 20 years off cigarettes this year. The most difficult and memorable, rewarding thing I've ever done. 20 years of helping people, Fiona. Mm. How do people get more information then? Because, again... You know, people, we tend to put barriers in front of ourselves, right? So we'd be like, oh, I don't want to do that, but if I do that, well, then this will happen, and then this is... So initially, obviously, just have the conversation. You're not going to rip the ciggies out of someone's hands, right?
Sure.
So this is about, let's have a consultation, let's take it from there.
Absolutely. So let's have that conversation to see where the client is at. And I suppose something that I thought of there when Mo was talking, once you've made the decision to stop smoking once, you're never going to go back to becoming a comfortable or a happy smoker. So you've got a journey ahead of you of being an uncomfortable smoker. You made me uncomfortable all the time. So why not put the time and energy into actually, right, okay, do you know what? Let's get the right help and support and let's do something about this. Mm. And as Moa's testament, I mean, life for you has been so much better physically, but also psychologically. Yeah. Like our mental health improves when we stop smoking. We're less stressed, all those
and
things.
And in a way, I don't want to misspeak here, but, you know, there's a lot of addictions and smoking is one of the very difficult ones. But a lot of... It's one of those ones too, though, that you can continue with your life, right? You know, because I would know people maybe who had an addiction to alcohol and they no longer can socialise, and they do that in the long... Socialise in the pub environment, I should say. And they do that in the long term. And, you know, it is a tough journey. You do have to make some, in many cases, life alterations. A gambler might have to block loads of apps and all this kind of stuff. Smoking is tough thing to give up. But you were able to say to Mo, go out and socialise, because that's part of the process of getting free. So in a way, if you know what I mean, it's one of the least impactful on your general existence of addictions to give up. Does that make sense, or if I overcomplicated it?
It is and it isn't, I think. Mm. I think it's actually, we've normalised tobacco over the years where it's just a bad habit. Like, so we're now trying to actually, I suppose, make people aware that it is an addiction. And for most addiction, we actually need support and treatment. We've had it for other addictions for years. Tobacco in the last 20 years, yes, we've been pretty good here in Ireland. But up until that point, we haven't.
How concerned are you about teenagers forming nicotine addictions now?
Hugely concerned with
and
vaping.
Once you're addicted to nicotine and a vape, it's a very easy sidestep onto ciggies. Are you getting many contacts from... Have you seen a downward trend in age?
Like everything that we as teenagers have done in our lives, there's fads. And certainly the statistics would suggest that the vaping rates have slightly decreased. They're still quite high. I'm really concerned in relation to vaping, because the level of nicotine and the way that the nicotine gets into the brain from a vape is actually different to how it comes in from a cigarette. So I know some young people who are vaping essentially 40 cigarettes a day quite easily without realising what they're doing. Because to them, it's just a case of, oh, sure, it's something sweet, it's something bright, it's something fruity. This is what I'm doing. Whereas it's a huge addiction. And I don't think we even know the extent of it yet, Greg.
No, I think it's there.
It's huge. It is there.
And I think very close to the majority of teenagers vape. And I think they can conceal it very well. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a tsunami of very severe nicotine addiction. I don't know how many cigarettes you smoked a day. At my worst, it was when the 30 packs come out and I went up to about 26 a day. Yeah. These kids are vaping 18 milligrams of nicotine, as you say, 40, 50 cigs a day's worth. Okay. Fiona really helped me get off cigarettes. I'm off them a while and my kids and wife were a great motivation to do it. Fiona told me to put the money away and use it for something useful. This week, a new car is being delivered.
Oh, wow.
Okay. We haven't got you to a car yet. does that, the financial side of it, is it a motivator for you, Mo?
I think it's, again, from the listeners out there, as a former smoker, which is an amazing thing to see.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Finance is never really an issue. Sadly, whatever the cost,
it's part of your budget.
It was just you just simply tapped the card or whatever. You didn't really think about it.
Your 7 euro purchase in the newsagents just was 22 euro, and that was just
that's right.
It was,
whatever groceries you get, you also added on 19 euros or 19 euros extra, and you didn't think anything of it.
Okay.
So I think that. You talked about it earlier, Fiona. It's financial reasons are not. It's not the main, but of course, it's a huge bonus. And well done to that listener getting a nice car.
Yeah, fantastic, isn't it?
And
that's
I think with
rewarding
the finances
yourself
as well. You often do without things without realizing that you're doing without them, because you make the choice.
And also, to what you will find is that someone who stops smoking may not find that they're better off either. That's just a quirk of stuff, and it seems almost impossible to say that, but. You know, that's why you don't use money as the great motivator. But if you can put it to one side.
Or even some of it,
Yeah, get yourself a nice little car. Right, so what's the next step for people? I mean, listen, some people try and go cold turkey today for 2% of them. Fair play to yous. But unfortunately, if you do it unsuccessfully, it could kick down the road 6 months or a year actually doing it with support and have a 20% chance at least of success. So what should people do in terms of contact?
Yeah, just if from the Donegal Service, if you just want to ring the office on 07491 04693 and some of the staff there will let you know where your nearest service is, or you can stop smoking Donegal at hse.ie and the team monitor the emails coming out from that as well.
All right, brilliant. So. Never want to waste an opportunity. Mo, have you anything to plug?
I just want to say, just Greg, on that, is today there'll be people trying and the very best luck, but don't worry if it doesn't work out.
Yeah, exactly.
I've said this for many Ash Wednesdays, is just to know that the legs of Fiona and that service is there. And I think really, realistically, it's better to get the help rather than try and feel you can go alone.
And love yourself. Do it that way. Love yourself. Don't bust yourself up by trying to set yourself up for failure, because that's the definition of failure, isn't it? What have you got to plug for us?
Greg, thanks very much.
This is a separate matter altogether, by the way.
School midterms on, and the Rathmullen Film Festival is on from this evening, the gala night, all the way through to Sunday evening, and there's workshops for children and adults on how to make movies. There's even stunt movies. There's how to, you know, act in movies, and there's also...
So these are workshops that are running over the time. Brilliant, lovely.
There's also Donegal movies, and there's also foreign movies as well in various locations around Rathmullen.
So the screens have popped up around Rathmullen, and is there a place people can go just to sort of pick and choose what activities or films they might want to see?
There is. If you go to rathmullen.ie / Rathmullen Film Fest.
Yeah. So, and is it mostly locals, or does it draw a big crowd from around the place?
Well, Fiona, you're
so are you involved in that as well?
No, but, well, they have some other events at the Rye Community Centre. My kids would have been taking it over the years. We live up in Rye. No, it's fantastic. They actually, it's for local and for visitors.
Yeah.
And lots of people now make their visiding choice to come.
That's what I was
during
thinking.
The midterm.
And
the kids have loads of activities to do during it. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's great. I think it's 10 years. Is it roughly?
Is
it 8 years?
We have a massive interest in filmmaking in this country. Mm. I was, I think it was around the time of the election, was in a number of different schools and asking. And also students that come in here for various reasons. And there's a huge interest in, not just in front of the camera stuff, but film production, direction, runners, grips, all that kind of stuff. It's fantastic. There's something going on here, which is really positive. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so that was as part of today, National No Smoking Day. Thank you very much to Mo. Here's to 101 days tomorrow. Mo Kelly from Rathmullen. And also Fiona Boyle, who is Tobacco Lead and Senior Health Promotions Officer with HSE. Get in touch with their offices via the numbers, the mobile. And the reason he put himself forward here is because his life has changed off the back of doing exactly what we're encouraging you to do today. Is there a cost for joining this program? Do I need a medical card to avail of it before I let you go? Just to text.
No, it's free. If regarding your medication, if you do have a medical card, we will be organising your medication through your GP. If you don't have a medical card, we'll organise to get your medication posted to you.
Hi, Greg. Myself and wife stopped smoking 14 years ago, thanks to Fiona Boyle. If I knew it was going to be easy with her program, I would have been off them years ago, smoking since I was 14 years old. So there you go. Everyone has different stories.
Thanks a million to Mo for putting himself forward.
Well done, Mo.
It's really
important. He also got to plug a great festival too, so it was a win-win for all of us. Greg, it's time that hypnotism was included in smoking cessation programs, as it does work if you want to give up. It worked for me 16 years off them and can sit in a smoking area without a thought. Only problem is if I dream and I am smoking, I wake up thinking, oh my God, am I back on these things again? Probably saved my life giving them up, plus the cost of money is so much. Anyone who's smoked before, not anyone, but it's not because of hypnotism. You will dream, I think, that you have been smoking. Not everyone wants to really be hypnotized either. It's not something I'd be too keen on. And the systems that are there are tried and tested. I remember when I was in my 30s, 20s, hypnotism was all over the place. There would be little ads in the newspapers. You don't see as much of it now as you used to in the past. But if it worked for you, that's what makes me happy.
Your viewpoint, your region, your show, The Greg Hughes Show.
So we've been covering these cuts to SNAs. And yesterday, the Minister for Education and Youth, Hildegard Nocton, announced a pause to the review of special needs assistance allocations following concerns raised by parents and schools. The spokesperson for the minister confirmed that all review changes, including those who've already received letters regarding any reductions, have been paused pending the outcome of engagement on the issue. One of the parents we spoke to on this issue was Janice. We spoke about cuts to SNAs and what it would mean for her child. A respite, a reprieve, Janice, I suppose, is what we could describe it as.
Well, we could, Greg, in a way. When we initially heard the news, someone had screenshotted it and I'd seen the headline and I'd seen pause and there was lots of excitement. We thought this is great, you know, within the community, within the school community. But realistically, when you sit and think about it, that's all it is. It's a pause. It's not good enough. It needs to be completely reversed because at any time they could turn around and say, right, we're going to unpause this. More than likely, the Board of Education are famous for making their decisions when it's like the last day of term in the hope that they're not too much publicity about it. So it is something that we're going to have to keep a close eye on because a pause isn't good enough. We need it completely reversed. We need the SNAs to stay within the schools that they're already in. They're saying they have another 1,700 coming along. Well, instead of doing a redeployment plan, let them go into the new positions that are available there and then.
I think,
but a pause simply isn't good enough.
I think the Department of Education have guidelines that haven't been enforced. We as the public have a lived reality and an expectation, and that gap needs to be bridged because if they enforce their guidelines as they are set out, it is not going to meet the needs of our children and the expectation of their parents.
It definitely isn't, Greg. And, you know, they're saying the SNAs, as we spoke about there last week, are there in mainstream schools for inclusion. So they're completely going against everything that they're saying. They're reducing the SNAs, they're cutting them. Well, where's the inclusion? Because they're affecting all kids, not just kids with additional needs. You know, and they're saying about a redeployment plan. I don't think they have a redeployment plan in place. I think that's what this pause is possibly about, so they can get a redeployment plan in place, which means that any SNA then that is cut can be redeployed within 45 kilometres. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a big distance. So somebody, an SNA in Buncrana could be redeployed as far as somewhere in Letterkenny. That's not realistic. These guys should not have to work on a year-to-year basis. They have absolutely no security whatsoever within their jobs. They should be given a job, and that should be then them in that job up until they're either not able to do it or they're at retirement stage.
Okay.
You know, instead of every year having to fight for their job.
All right, okay, that makes sense. Janice, thank you very much indeed. So a little earlier on, I spoke to SNA Anya just to get an insight into the situation from her perspective. And obviously there's been developments in this story since you first made contact with us here at Highland Radio, but I suppose you, like many others, were really surprised that we were starting to learn that these types of cuts were happening.
Yeah, it's I suppose I've been aware now for 2 years that these exceptional reviews were going to take place. So in 2024, the department published and the NCSE, the SNA toolkit, as it was called, and that highlighted a number of changes to the way that SNAs would be allocated to schools. In the old ways, days, it was the child got a diagnosis, the child was assigned the SNA. Now they've changed it and that it's very much similar to the way the special ed teaching hours are applied. It's the school gets the SNAs and they, I suppose, provide for the... It's on a three-tiered approach where we call it the continuum. So you have your children who would be at classroom support level, which is your first response. And you put your strategies in place and your differentiation for those children. And then as needs arise, they may move on to tier two and tier three. And for special ed teaching in the years gone by, it used to be learning support or resource. So the children who had a diagnosis for dyslexia or dyspraxia or, you know, the learning difficulties would have got the resource hours. They combined those and made them special education teaching hours. And we put that in a continuum the same way. But it's so much easier because we use standardized testing scores. So the standardized test is supplied by the department, and the children are scored on where they are with their age group. So the policy can be written, and we can put our children under a 10th percentile or a 20 percentile, and give the most in need must get the highest level of support. And the highest level of support should be with your most trained and your highest qualified staff. And that's the same now for special needs. But the thing is, with your children with your ASD and your ADHD and so on, their needs cannot be categorized. You know, we cannot put them into a category and say, well, today Mary is here and expect her to be there tomorrow, because that's not how it works. Now, in top of all of this, I mentioned to you before in a message, was this new guidance document that was published in February. It's a fantastic piece of work from the NCSE, and it's called RELATE in capitals. And it's a regulation-first approach, a lot of which schools already use, because schools, another thing, Greg, is that we would have access to an educational psychologist who advises teachers and SNAs on the best strategies to use with children, pair their individual needs. And this year, schools like my school, that was taken away. So it's now like a NOWDOC service for your NEP psychologist, because there's not enough of them for the needs that are out there. So if I have a child who I want support with, say, the strategies I'm using on my tier one aren't working and I want further, I have to log that call in, and then somebody might call me back 3 weeks later. Do you see, you know, there's so much going on here, Greg, that a lot of people don't understand.
I think listening to you describe it, it's so complex and almost overly engineered, you know, and this in the context too of when we were expecting in the last budget announcement, the budget for this year, you know, hundreds and hundreds of additional SNAs on a very sort of outside of the knowledge circle approach, you'd think, well, where's the problem here? But listening to you describing it, it's incredibly overcomplicated.
It really is, you know, and I said this in my my letter to Charlie McConlogue that I sent away last week. We need clarity. The other thing is, the circulars relate back to the 2014, to the original SNA advice. And it states that there's 10 primary care needs, but they're very broad. They're so broad, you know. And the number five, I think it is behaviour. We are being told now, and this is a time when there's a huge rise in behaviours of concern, as we call them, that the NCSE do not want to hear about behaviours. That is the words that I heard from those in power. They don't want to support us until we can prove that we've used this RELATE document that just came out in February. And schools, like, I happened to do a course in the summer when I was off, and it was titled Behaviours of Concern. When I went into it, I realised this was something my whole school, every teacher in Ireland should know about, but the department did not communicate that to schools. Like, this is far bigger than our new curriculum, in my opinion, because it permeates everything. If we cannot help our children to regulate and access the curriculum, do you see, Greg?
Yeah, is it possible this could be pivoted into a positive, though, in that what this has identified, I think, is that recognition of the work SNAs actually do. It goes far beyond what is in the SNA circulars that you described. So is this pause perhaps an opportunity for us to actually understand what we're talking about here? And I don't mean people like you. I'm on about even those that make the decisions, that they understand the role of an SNA, the need of the children, and how the resources can be best matched to the need.
I honestly think, Greg, what a big part of what's come out now, what everybody is starting to see and realise, is the bureaucracy is there and everything is shivved down to schools. But they need to come down to our level and see exactly on the ground what is involved in that job. Do you know, we have SNAs in our classrooms that teachers will say they could not do without, you know, and one of my SNAs has 10-minute lunch break if she's lucky, because she's pulled, she has four in her room. She has to try and get to another room. And yes, you're right. We couldn't survive without our SNAs. These are adults who are highly skilled and qualified. And the children have, you know, there's a big talk now about that one trusted adult. They build relationships with these children, and, you know, they meet them at the gate, and they're, you know, it's such a huge thing that I don't have the words, you know, to really truly describe it.
Yes, perhaps those who don't have a child with additional needs might look at the raw numbers and see 25,000 SNAs. And if that's not enough, we'd have an incredible issue with children needing additional help in schools, or maybe even how we're assessing children needs looking at, or what would you say to someone that might have that point of view? Because on the face of it, you know, 25,000 SNAs sounds like a lot of SNAs, yet we're finding a situation whereby the government was going through a process of withdrawing the number of SNAs from certain schools, if that makes sense.
There is a small percentage, and I know they're trying to make that argument that children move on to, you know, they're moving to secondary and so on, and, you know, but we have children where I am moving out of our school to go over the border because they can get access straight away to an SNA. That's how much it means to parents, you know. And the other side of it is, you know, children are coming into school and the needs are not identified. It's only because they're in a different environment, and as time goes on and they're really holding themselves together and they're, you know, maybe halfway through a year, or as they go into senior infants and we start seeing, oh, there's something more here, you know, our early intervention isn't working there, you know, and the needs become clear then that it's something more than, you know, just a change, a move up from preschool to primary school.
And then finally, rather than this pause being seen as a victory, does this need to be a springboard for actual improvements and reviews and so on and so forth?
I really think it needs to be that the NCSE need to come down and actually listen to the people on the ground. Greg, I'll give you an example. See these exceptional reviews. They are breaking staff. They're SNAs who are losing sleep because they're worried about being interviewed, that they won't get across the needs that they are looking after. There are teachers like me who went nights without sleep because we're trying to fill in all of the paperwork to show that we are doing all this regulation first. And the other side of it is, at the minute, Greg, the circulars that have come out, they are conflicting information here. So one is saying you do not need to do your inclusion practice document. The other saying you do need to do it. And then feedback from your reviews is telling schools they need to get their teachers to be trained in this RELATE, which the department hasn't told staff that it's mandatory at all. So how do you get people, teachers, to do training that they're not being told is mandatory? So yes, there needs to be a big look at this now.
Okay, Anne, listen, thank you so much for your insights. Yeah, sorry, we just lost the line there. Thank you so much, Anne, for giving us that insight.
Thank you, Greg. So I hope I give you a little bit of a picture.
You did, and she did indeed. Thank you so much to Anya there. I referenced her as Anne, but her name is Anya. So that's to get an insight, really, of what's going on from the inside. Okay, good morning, Greg. Please, can you wish our friend Jennifer Doherty from Buncrana a very happy 40th birthday? Of course we can. And this comes in with lots of love from Philip, Nancy and Darren McCracken. More than happy to do that for you. Very busy on the phone lines today, by the way. Thank you so much. And I'm going to get through as many of them as I can as I await my next guest. Hi there. Call out to the person who lost their armchair recently between Umacram and just after the Sledrin crossroads where the forest used to be. The chair has been lying at the side of the road in the scrub bushes and plain for all to see passing, including locals and tourists. And I saw, we know who put the chair there and we're giving you a chance to remove it before further action is taken. Do the right thing. Thanks in advance. Waiting, but not patiently. Sooner done would be best, they say. Hi, Greg. Regional road between Newton and St Johnston is a disgrace. State in a disgraceful state. All hauliers from South Inishowen using the route to Dublin. That comes in from Oisin. Yes, indeed, we've had that one come up before, so that's not brand new. That didn't, it means what I'm saying effectively. So you're not on your own with your concerns there. Right, Mary Coyle is manager of Donegal Cancer Flights and Services and joins me on the programme now. Thank you very much for your time, Mary.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, I suppose really maybe a sign of what could be to come. It doesn't happen that often under the current contract, but the flight from Donegal to Dublin, 7:55 this morning, cancelled, and this has impacted a number of cancer patients.
Yeah, I suppose it is. We can see how, I know this is due to weather and we can never predict what the weather is going to throw at us, but it's just a good example of the confidence that people will lose in this service, because if we were waiting for a flight to come from Dublin this morning, under the new schedule, you know, it is a massive worry for patients trying to get to Dublin if that doesn't come. And then we have no, we will have no lunchtime flight to rely on. But on a morning like today, we have patients that once they watch the weather and once they realise that the weather is not going to be in their favour, they will make alternative arrangements or they will push their appointments out. So that's what we need to prevent. We can't be letting this happening, because I know that if the flight doesn't go out due to weather, there is a bus, but there lies the problem. It is too much for cancer patients to be using a 4-hour bus journey. Plus, by the time the bus would arrive up there, they will have missed their appointments.
Since the last time I spoke to you, a meeting with the minister has been agreed. You're going to meet with them on the 24th. And I suggest that I hope the minister and his advisers and public representatives have him fully briefed of where we're at before this meeting, because we can't surely have this as a starting point where he's in listening mode and then begins maybe to look at things. You know, all the info is out there. He knows what the crack is. Absolutely. He needs to be coming. He needs to be coming to the meeting on the 24th with a solution or complete honesty.
Absolutely, and that's what we need, Greg. We're not going up to Dublin again. You know, we are busy people as well. We all have jobs at home. We're not going up to Dublin to rehash what we said the other day when we were up. We spent about 3 hours with the officials. We covered every avenue that we could. We are going up now. As you say, we're looking for solutions. You will have seen that the Minister for Health, we wrote to the Minister for Health. She came out yesterday looking way down, obviously a number of years, at having a Centre of Excellence here in Donegal. But for now, we need a solution. We need to be told on Tuesday when we go up there, this is the way ahead, this is what we've done so far, and this is the solution to the problem. That's what we're looking for on Tuesday.
The fight is for a retention. It's not for anything additional. It is for a continuance of the survey, that the service that, hey, nothing is perfect, but it has serviced the needs. This is a public service obligation. The 17, 18 million euro of tax money, taxpayers' money on the table here. The reality is we know phantom flights on the way up. It's not just about the health. It's about tourism. It's about golfers. It's about people returning from abroad. This is how you responsibly spend taxpayers' money and provide a public service.
And absolutely. And it's actually it's actually more money. It's 20 million euro. Like, okay, there's quite a sizable amount there, you know, and 21 years we have had this service, 21 years, and they decide without consultation that they're going to take some of this service away. And you're right, it's not just about the patients, it is about the people of Donegal. It's about tourism, it's about work, it's about students, it's about everybody, you know. And we have seen it is unbelievable, the amount of people that are coming in behind us. It's unbelievable. We have businesses, we have at this stage, we have over 20,000 signed that mm-hmm. petition. Surely they must hear this. Surely they have to see the importance of this.
But what is critical for me, and it actually literally talks to what you've just said there, is an understanding of what we're actually talking about here. So you've been questioned on the national media. Sure, there's a flight in the morning, a flight in the evening. What else do you want? We heard the Taoiseach reference this in the Dáil. But not actually talk to the reality of not just cancer patients. We spoke to a family of a 15-year-old that needs regular treatment in Dublin. The key thing, sorry for me, is, and I'm rambling, is that the ministers and their officials understand what we're talking about. That understand what we're talking about and what this means to many hundreds of people and their support network. You know, it's not about, oh, we're from Donegal and we fancy this. This is about what we need to have something close to equal access to healthcare. And unless they get that and they get the stories and understand the heartache and the hardship, I don't trust them to make the right decision.
Yeah, and it when we went to Dublin last week, we had two patient voices with them. So they heard about, you know, the difficulties that these patients face. So it is for us now, Greg, it is definitely about action. We need to see what they're going to do. They will have had a week to obviously meet with the airline, to sit down with the officials, and they must have a way forward for this now. I must say, when I listened to what the Taoiseach said yesterday, he acknowledged the problem, he acknowledged the anger, but it's not enough. It really isn't enough. It's time that they sat down, sorted the problem, and let us all get back to what we have to do, our jobs. And for them to give us, exactly as you said earlier, give us just the service that we had. We're not asking for any more. Mm. We're just asking for the service.
If the minister says to you, I understand what you're saying, I'm very sympathetic to what you are saying, we are going to continuously review this, we'll return to this in 3 months, what would you say to him if he says that to you?
I think if he says that to us, I think unless the airline is on board for a start, a review is pointless. You know, there is no point in carrying out a review. No review is going to show the money that people spend if they have to go to Dublin and stay overnight. No review is going to show the anguish that these people have to go through if they're sitting waiting for flights, wondering whether it comes in or not. You have to sit down and you have to think about the people. When we presented to the officials last week and we did an in-depth presentation, what they said to us, we have a better understanding now of the needs of Donegal. Oh my God, Greg, I couldn't believe it. How did they not look for that understanding before they signed that contract?
And maybe too, yeah, I can't understand it either. And it's the first question I've been asking right from the beginning and failing to get a response. And also too, and I know this seems like a gotcha, but maybe it is time that Dara O'Brien or even one of his high-ranking officials start the morning off in the house of that family of the 15-year-old who's been travelling for treatment for 4 years to Dublin in the car and see if they get to the border before they have to stop to take a break or what have you, and sit in that car for the 4.5, 5, 6 hours, depending on stops, potentially miss that appointment and then get back in the car and come back up the way. And until that happens, I wonder, will they ever really get it? But anyway, I have no doubt if you're... persuasive language, and hopefully they get the message. Mary, thank you. Thank you also, by the way, as you mentioned, you are a very busy person, and I'm sure on behalf of all the people that avail of this service, have in the past and will into the future, it's very admirable what you are doing. It's amazing, and thank you very much, because you're doing an awful lot on behalf of an awful lot of people, you and those supporting you. But it's
absolutely very much
appreciated and is not taken for granted.
We have an absolute fabulous committee here, and we have here in Enniddany Perthic, the staff. It's absolutely brilliant, and it allows us to do what we have to do. But Greg, can I say one more thing?
Please.
If this doesn't work for us, I have been in touch with all the bus companies in this area, and they have guaranteed that they will provide buses free of charge, and we will be going in massive numbers to Dublin until we are heard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel an outside broadcast coming on. Okay, listen, thanks very much, Mary. Look after
yourself.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Tourism. Why are Donegal County Council hiring beach guards when there won't be any tourists in Donegal? Because very few families can afford to stay in a hotel for the holidays. I understand where you're coming from, but thankfully, we still enjoy big numbers of tourists here. And it's not just for tourists, it's for us as well. So I think I get the wider point you're making, but I do think the Coast Guards are critical. Morning, Greg. My doctor request beach, the not Coast Guards, what are they called? Morning, Greg. My doctor requested me to get my sugar bloods done last week. I have a medical card. I had to pay €20. I never had to pay before. Thank you for a great show. You do. Interesting, because I thought if you were getting a blood test for diagnosis reasons, it was free. So I don't know what the story is. Now, we are joined on the programme by Nam, owner of Smile Thai Massage in Letterkenny. Nam, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yes, you're really welcome.
Now, I think it's an interesting conversation that has sparked nationally about the really unacceptable requests that are being made of those working or running massage parlours. And one lady in Connemara, she's refusing now to take male clients. So how often would your business get requests for additional services, if we could put it like that?
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, like, every single day, and I'm no joke, every single day.
Without exception. So every day there's a fella that will ring up and or text and make an inquiry for additional services.
So basically because, you know, I'm in the first contract. So basically they either call me or text. You know, normally they don't text because if I go those type of messages, I won't respond. But yeah, they basically just call just by any chance. But I'm open business now. It's a year four. And I've just found it's quite, you know what I mean, I'm very clear. Like, we're running the business for 4 years, so we never have any, even come across or offer those type of services. But this man, well, the reason I say man, because it's only man ask for these services. Yeah, they just sneaky asking, you know, even when they say no over the phone. Or you know what they do? They go in the shop and ask my girl direct and put them on a really tough spot. And yeah, that guy is quite disrespectful toward us, toward the masseuse, you know. It's just really hard to be in a really. I try to find any method to deal with this query, but it's really hard. I just don't know what to do.
But as women as well, firstly, it's presuming maybe because of your cultural background that this is the type of thing you might do, but also it's kind of abusive to ask a woman that. You know, you wouldn't do that in the street. Would it be okay to proposition your staff?
Exactly. Like, you know, at the moment, I'm literally in Thailand. I just came for, like, you know, a few week holiday. I went for a massage, like, just yesterday. And literally, I asked a girl around here because loads of massage shop in Thailand. You know, I'm just asking, like, are you get a lot like a foreigner come in and like after like do something else or, you know, I mean, or those things. You know what? Literally, they don't have many foreigner like asking like, or this girl, even in Thailand, I asked about 10 massage shop and only one shop that respond, yes, they will have, but it's not a lot. But like for some reason, it's why this man, they think it's okay to ask like, you know, for example, in Ireland and UK, and they just like, you know, the cheeky word they say, you know, the first thing that when they call me, they'd be like, happy ending. I'd be like, what? That's it. Like, just no respect. So whatsoever.
Why do you think it's normalised for men in this country to ask a Thai masseur that question? Like, where is this information or notion, do you think, coming from? Is it porn addiction?
You know, from I literally been looking into it myself because I don't even know about this industry much until I opened the business. Apparently, like, you know, Thailand, I know, like, a lot of people, when you talk about Thailand, you talk about massage, Muay Thai or something like that. But when they came over here, they only go to the places like, for example, Pattaya. And this Pattaya is well known for the sex worker, you know, the red zone, that. But and people think the whole Thailand is just the Pattaya. But if you go to those places, that's what they do. That's what they offer, you know. So, but and it's really high percentage. That's a lot tourism come here and they go to Pattaya, go to Phuket, and those places. I don't want to assuming, you know what I mean. But I believe they probably have some places that offer things like this. But then again, from my own experience, I think the Thai man they arguing like the Thai massage or the Thai masseuse. I don't want to sound harsh or disrespectful toward the Irish or the British or whatever, but I think they just look down on those girls. Mm. Honestly, they think it's easier. Like, I have the girl call me, like, you mean, oh, like, no, you need to come in because I can't deal with it. So basically, this guy refused to leave the shop and he just, like, you know what I mean, like, to say, I have money. Why can't you do it for me? And then they pass a comment, it's like, I know you need this money.
Wow.
For your family or something like that. I'm just thought it's quite, okay, all right. And I literally have no comment. I'm just like, please just leave. And this literally happened in Letterkenny.
Do you think it's older men, younger men, single men, married men, men in a relationship, or all types of men that be seeking these services?
All type of men, yes. Believe me or not, all type of men.
Married, it does matter, in
single, they married, but yep, it does matter. But it's more like, you know, from what, well, I believe it's like the man over 40, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're married. Yeah, they even say themselves, I'm married.
Wow.
Yeah, they just say like that. It's no shame.
Yeah, and I mean, you also have, firstly, you are perfectly entitled to not be disrespected, so the presumption that you might do something like this. But I do, you know, as a business owner, I do particularly then feel sorry for your staff, especially in that situation where they had to call you in and that man was quite insistent. No one should have to experience that in the workplace. I don't care if you're a masseur, work in IT or clean windows. You should be able to go about your everyday work and be treated as a professional.
Exactly. It's like, especially like, you know, in this massage industry, like, and all my girl, you know, like, they're all Asian, like, they're from Thailand, they're from Cambodia, and to be honest, and the communication sometimes is not great, the English is not great, and this man, they just try to manipulating, like, you know what I mean, or like, just basically abusing the girl, yeah, even if they refuse to offer, they will say, you know, like, the hurtful word to them and call them name and they can't defend themselves. If I'm not there, you know what I mean? Like, they just, sometimes even those men, they knew I'm not there. They will go in and start abuse the girl.
That's unbelievable.
And it's like I said, it's just really hard because we in Letterkenny for 4 years and we have a lot of customers, like, we well know I have both male and female customer, you know, and they should know by now that we don't offer thing like this, but they still keep coming back, even they knew we not offer thing like that by shunt. That's why it's bad to me in this part as well. It's like, how can they not respect us? Because they think, all right, they ask the time, we don't offer them the services, but they believe if they come back again, so, we will change our mind.
So do sometimes as well, sorry, and I won't hold you much longer, sometimes as well, you know, when you or one of the staff return to the space where the massage takes place, that maybe men have fully undressed or are positioning themselves in a way where nothing is left to the imagination, if I could put it like that. Does that happen as well? Is that a way they try and sort of see if anything else is going on?
Aye, that definitely. The one who says some men, they are like, you know, like they just book in as normal, like, and they go in and just say after 15 minutes they start to get really shaky. Like, yeah, they start to be like say things to the masseuse and like, you know what I mean, and start to grab them by hand or by whatever. We had that and it's a law. And the situation like that, like, you know, I just told the girl, just stay calm and leave the room. And just ask the customer to leave the shop. Just that's all we can do because, you know what I mean, it's very difficult to be in a visual, like, just for a girl, you know what I mean, you're in the room with a big bloke. And yeah, and that is literally that has happened a lot.
Okay. All right. Brilliant. Thanks, Nam. Well, I was in there 2 days ago and my back is feeling great, by the way. I just, by the way, just as a coincidence, I'm not sure which member of your staff was there, but they were fantastic. My back was in absolute bits, but I feel great now. Okay, Nam, listen, enjoy the rest of your time back in Thailand. We look forward to you returning. Thanks very much for your time.
Desmond, and thank you so much. You take care. Thank
you. Bye. That's Nam, owner of Smile Thai Massage in Letterkenny. So you heard directly from her. Single guys, married guys, guys that say, look, I'm married, can you do this? Asking for additional services, inappropriate conversations, inappropriate touching. How often does it happen? Every single day. Now, we were due to speak to Lisa McGee about her new Netflix show. And also, of course, you know Lisa McGee, she created Derry Girls, and she's a lovely, down-to-earth, really normal person. She loves Donegal, and Donegal features in a new show. So it's How to Get to Hell from Belfast, I think it's called, isn't it? Is that right? No one's looking at me. How to Get to Hell from Belfast? What is it called again? How to Get to Heaven from Belfast, all right? And Donegal features quite strongly. I've already recorded that interview with Lisa and I'll play that out for you tomorrow. So my apologies, I did flag it, but it's going to be on the show tomorrow. And we'll also put it up on social separately so that you can listen to it whenever you like. Caller says, on the roads, $2.5 million for the 10T project. It won't build a bridge. They spend more sending councillors on holidays for St. Patrick's Day. Well, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm the biggest cynic going, but I do know they are moving this project forward. That $2.5 million, it's not really to finish the project or even won't buy a barrier. It's to cover the costs of moving it through the planning process. And we do have a very arduous planning system here, and I suppose it's good in some ways and bad in others. I think continued funding from the TII shows a commitment to that road, which would make you feel that maybe it is going to happen. On the issue of smoking, hi Greg, as regards stopping smoking, I was a smoker for years and I tried everything to stop and it didn't work. But then one day I just decided to take one day at a time and willpower won. And I haven't smoked in over 20 years. Well done to you. I started the HSC We Can Quit programme in Bonkrana in April of 2023. I smoked my last cigarette 1,050 days ago and have no intention of smoking again. But one day at a time, if anyone's thinking about it, then do this programme as you won't regret it. And fair play to you. I wonder if you were, and it's not, I mean, how much are cigarettes now? Say 16 euro a packet, if we were to average it out over all of those days, I don't know, 16,000 euro saved in your pocket. But that's not the motivation, it's your health, isn't it? Hi Greg, traffic from Mountain Top to Lower Main Street is already causing 30 to 40 minute delays, and with the new building besides Optum Roundabout, hospital expansion and an upcoming veterinary college and ATU projects, congestion will only worsen. With millions of funding allocated for the road network, are proactive measures being discussed now to prevent a long-term traffic crisis? Thanks, Anil. Well, narrow the roads. That's a good plan, isn't it, with all this development work that's ongoing? Narrow the roads. Can you ask Brian, is there any of this money will be used for drainage, especially our local and regional roads, which is not being done for years? No good tarring roads, and a few days later it's washed away with water, which has roads destroyed and also very treacherous with frost. All councils need to appoint someone also to check where all the water is coming from. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you really so much for all of your comments. It's very much appreciated. We're back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.